So, we're all certainly hopeful that we've turned the corner with the lightning fire. The air quality was a little worse today than it has been in the last couple of days, but I imagine there'll be some ups and downs until all the fire is out. People are still evacuated from the San Lorenzo Valley. And we all bear witness to the suffering of sentient and insentient beings throughout the northern part of our county that have suffered so greatly in this fire. And as you're all very aware, this came on top of almost 6 months of staying close to home. And so much illness and death in the United States and around the world because of COVID virus. We added the fire on top of those worries. And then we all are carrying so deeply the racism and the systemic racism that has been so obvious to us these last months and even these last few days in America. So I find myself holding quite a bit, grieving quite a bit. And not really participating as fully in life with all of these difficulties piling on. Of course, staying at home the way we've done has made us look inward, which is a valuable practice. So there is that going on. And all of us have been very grateful for things like this Zoom environment where we can stay in touch and communicate with each other. I think we would have found a way to communicate no matter what. Our nature is to be connected. And even with the fire, moving a lot of us around and definitely keeping us indoors and the COVID virus and the internal look that the George Floyd killing has put upon us, I think we would have found ways to connect the way that we all put our masks on and many went into the streets with each successive police killing. The way Zoom, we're all participating in Zoom, and the way we're all looking inward so wholeheartedly. So to try to figure this all out, this reality of my life, Dogen always has some ideas, and I've been looking at his fascicle, The Wholehearted Practice of the Way, or Bendo-wa, in Japanese, and specifically the Uchiyama Roshi commentary on this fascicle, The Wholehearted Practice of the Way. And one thing that Dogen says is that this self that's trying to figure the reality of life out, trying to figure out the reality of life, is not separate from the reality of life. I'm not just a guest in this world that's watching it all on the screen. That being said, we're doing a lot of watching our lives on the screen. But Dogen reminds us that that we're not separate from the reality, which is none other than our true self. We're not just a guest watching it all happen and trying to figure it out and trying to come up with our own commentaries on life, that we are that life. And right now, we're the fire on the ridge, and we're worried about the virus and grieving people who have suffered so much from the virus. And we're looking inward at how racism has played a part in our lives. So this is our true self. We're not separate from that. One of Uchiyama's teachers called this self that is intimate and not separate from the reality around us. This teacher called that process the self settling into the self, or settling onto the self. And in this fascicle, Bendo Wa, The Wholehearted Practice of the Way, Dogen discusses a particular practice, a particular meditation called Jijuyu Zamai, the samadhi that fulfills the self, and the self experiences enjoyment and fulfillment. I like to think of that as this process of this self that sometimes I think of as just this body and mind that stops right here on my face and stops at the ground where my feet touch it. This practice of really being intimate with the reality all around me. I'm filling it up. That's the fulfill part. And I have to say, when I am intimate with my life, when I am connected, when I'm connected with you on the screen, there's some joy there. And that's the enjoyment part, this self-fulfilling and enjoying meditation that is described in this fascicle. And this meditation, this description of this meditation, has been such a key part of the practice of Soto Zen that is chanted all the time around the world in Soto Zen centers. When we're back in the Zendo, we chant it Tuesday mornings, the Jijuyu Zamai. I'm remembering Tuesday mornings was when Rob Hubner was the Doan for so many years, and I can remember him announcing the chant, Jijuyu Zamai. I can hear his voice. So it's a well-practiced and well-known meditation for us to realize that our full self, our whole self, our true self, is nothing but the fire on the ridge, nothing but sheltering in place, helping people keep safe and helping ourselves keep keep safe. And our true self is nothing but putting on the masks and going down to the town clock and connecting with people who are looking at racism in America. This is our true self. What really got me excited was Uchiyama's description about this self, this true self. He said, this true self is the vivid reality of life. And I really love that word, vivid. And it really helped me look at how do I express this life? Am I expressing it vividly? Am I really connected? Do I really feel intimate with the reality that is my life? I have to admit, I have to confess that I feel a little resistant to staying at home, sheltering in place. And I feel worry behind that resistance. So when I'm worried about the virus and when I'm reluctantly staying at home, that's not the vividness of the reality of life that Dogen is talking about. So it's joyful to think, can I get alive around this? Can I get vivid? Can I really connect with this and make it my whole life rather than reluctantly, with much worry, stay at home? I have to admit that, that I was pretty fearful of the fire. The air was so bad. The evacuation zones kept getting closer and closer to my neighborhood. In California, we've seen so many fires that really do take out, whole cities and whole neighborhoods. And so, I didn't feel so vivid. I was more fearful. And the thought of, you know, how can I express the vivid connection with my life, which is now about fire and air quality and watching about warnings. So I also admit to being a little bit embarrassed and ashamed of the white privilege that I've enjoyed all the years of my life at the expense of people of color. While I certainly had felt a more vivid connection to the solution of this problem when I went to a few of the marches and when I inquired about how to get involved with redefining police duties and police culture. That was the vivid part. The flip side was the shame and embarrassment that I hold because of the white privilege I've enjoyed. So I'm really attracted to this idea that this Jijuyu Zamayi, this self-fulfilling and enjoyment meditation, connects me vividly to the whole works, to the whole world, to my whole life. So this is what Dogen was teaching us 800 years ago. You know, Dogen's time, the introduction to this commentary by Uchiyama, talks about Dogen. Dogen wrote in a time of political unrest and illnesses that couldn't be cured. Dogen himself died at age 53 from an unknown illness. So Dogen wasn't particularly looking at illness and politics when he wrote the wholehearted practice of the way, but certainly his times weren't so different than these times. And he was saying, connect vividly with the whole works. The whole works is vivid, and that is your life. And this is the practice for manifesting that life, the Jijuyu Zamayi. In my head, I came up with a couple of examples of experiencing the vivid reality of life. I'm sure all of us have seen babies being born, or seen babies being born on TV, and you know they come out kind of still, kind of quiet, kind of contracted, and then there's that one big breath that just says, "I am now filling up the whole world," and everybody gets a big smile and tears come to their eyes when they hear that first big cry, because they know what that is. Not that they're remembering their own first breath, but because they know what it is to be connected fully to this vivid life. And here's that first expression of our vivid, intimate self, right there before us. So that was one example I thought of to express the self-fulfilling and enjoying samadhi and manifesting the true self. Another one was another medical example I thought of. Maybe you've seen TV shows or TV documentaries on transplant surgery, heart transplants, or kidney transplants, or now they're doing transplants of so many organs. I mean, many of you know that I was in medical school in the 80s, and trust me, in the 80s, the transplant world was very young, and they wouldn't let a medical student near any transplant surgeries in those days. So I've never gotten closer to them than watching them on TV either. But you see the organ coming in like a kidney or a heart, and it looks like a nice fresh organ. It looks just fine. It looks like it's ready to go. It's ready to go in. And then you see the doctors connecting it to the vessels, to the blood vessels. And then they undo the clamps, and this organ that looked like 100% before is transformed. It's teeming with life. It's throbbing with life. It changes color. It starts moving all on its own. And just like around the delivery room, all the all the doctors and the technicians in the transplant surgery are all smiling, and they say it's working. It looks like the heart is working. It looks like the kidney is working. It's immediately filled with vivid life, and there's enjoyment in the room, and this organ is now filled. It's full. So that was another example of just that vividness of the reality of life that is none other than our true self. And because it's connected, because it's intimate with reality. Another example I thought about was one that I did experience. I don't see anybody here tonight from the early 90s, but I was on the board. There's several board members zooming in with us tonight, so they'll be able to relate. It must have been, you know, the mid-90s, the early 90s. I'd been on the board a couple of years, and we decided to have an all-day workshop to redo the bylaws of the Zen Center. And Kathy was the president, and Kathy is so good at this. Kathy really does feel the vividness of the bylaws, of really getting it right, really getting those words right. So she really was modeling the vividness of this project that we were doing. And I will confess again that I was a little resistant. I was a little reluctant. But there I was doing my duty. Catherine was there, and the board had, you know, 10 or 12 people on it. And we just went through article by article, the bylaws. And we got to the part that there's a part in our bylaws that give us direction on how to choose a teacher at the Zen Center. Of course, Catherine was the teacher. We weren't doing any choosing. But this was about, you know, the next teacher, the succession plan, it's called. How does the board settle on the successor when Catherine was to go? And Catherine, you know, we were all young students there. None of us had ambition. But Catherine said, you know, I always thought that the next teachers at the Santa Cruz Zen Center would come right out of our Sangha. And maybe I was slow. Maybe I didn't understand our practice at all. But all of a sudden, I felt that that just like that organ that was connected to the blood vessels, you know, bursting into kind of throbbing life, that, oh, this practice that we're doing connects us to the Buddhas and ancestors of all time, connects us to the, makes us intimate with our life. And it just made me look at practice in a very different way, not with ambition, but this is the practice of the blood vein that connects us to all the Buddhas and ancestors, that connects us to, and Catherine certainly was always holding that. Maybe other people on the board kind of knew that, you know, that had been there longer than me, practiced longer than me, knew that, but this was all of a sudden I felt that the whole Zen Center was just now at that moment throbbing with life, throbbing with that blood vein connecting all the Buddhas and ancestors through Santa Cruz Zen Center, through me, through Kathy, through Jean, Peter Beckman was on the board in those days from Beckman's Bread. Steve Palmisano, who's going to be ordained next month at Ocean Gate, he was on the board then. It just seemed like we were transformed when Catherine said that. So those are some of my memories and examples of going from being a little resistant, being a little fearful. I'm feeling like a guest in my life. Maybe I thought I was a guest at the Santa Cruz Zen Center. Certainly, I came to the Santa Cruz Zen Center for a good rest and relaxation meditation that I could visit a few times a week and hear some inspiring words. And Catherine was the host. Or maybe, you know, Kathy and Jean had been around a few more years ahead of me. Maybe they were also part of the host. And I was still a guest. And somehow when Catherine made that her idea that, you know, this center was going to evolve and produce teachers and priests. You know, all of a sudden I wasn't a guest in this practice anymore. It seemed like I was connected to a much larger process. Maybe I'll finish up with some more of Catherine's words. Another line from Dogen in this fascicle. For disporting oneself freely in this samadhi, practicing zazen in an upright posture is the true gate. Although this dharma, this reality of life, is abundantly inherent in each person, it is not manifested without practice. It is not attained without realization. So disporting one's, this jijuyu zamayi, this self-fulfilling and enjoying samadhi, allows us to freely disport in our life. And that's a different experience. I think that leads right into this vivid connection with our life. But in the world, in my world of being worried and contracted because of virus and fires and shame of racism, this practice allows a little more spaciousness, allows me to see and be intimate with a larger database, allows me to connect in a different way. All of these terms, Dogen's term was freely disport, and Uchiyama's term was a vivid connection to the reality of life. Those were energizing for me, and helped make those were turning words for me. You know, I can connect more fully with this life. I can connect more vividly with this life. I can disport myself more freely in this life when I'm intimate rather than contracting in fear and worry. So just a few words from Catherine. And this is low-hanging fruit, let me tell you, because In her book, that we've been studying on Monday mornings, The Truth of This Life, there's a chapter called A Guest Called Fire. So she really addresses fire. And this is the fire in 2008 that threatened Tassajara. And of course, many of you know, one of the fire monks, David Zimmerman, wrote an essay called A Guest Called Fire, which is very moving. And Catherine reflects on that. And she also talks about a lecture from Jacosho Kwong in Sonoma Mountain Zen Center, one of Suzuki Roshi's early students. Accepting things as they are is a loss. Being in the moment is a loss. What are we losing? Our self-centeredness, our self-clinging, our ideas, our conditioning. We are also losing ourselves to the sound of the crickets, to the sound and feeling of the zendo as we sit. And when we know how to do this, to really lose, then we know how to be really alive. So this actually says the same thing as that vivid connection. You know, when we lose our conditioned fears, our conditioned worries, when we look at our shame and embarrassment fully and wholeheartedly, we lose ourselves to the crickets. We lose ourselves to what is really our life, and we start living fully. But no one tells us how difficult it is to accept life as it is, what a long, courageous, unsettling struggle it is not to hold back against the assaults of reality, to give up our preferences, assumptions, and habits, exhaling them again and again, as we gradually realize the futility of resistance, the futility of desires. These are Catherine's words here. We are aided in this turning by the arrival of events against which there is no protesting, when just this is all there is. What arrogance I have when I think I can protest against the fire on the ridge. No, I don't want that. No, I don't want that in my life. And to think that that just that desire for it not to be there would make it go away. That's what Catherine says. Sometimes we wake up when there is just this that is our life, when we have to shelter in place because the virus is so unpredictable. There's just this, and it causes that inward looking that we've found so valuable, many of us have said, and that we found that we also find so isolating at the same time. So maybe with Catherine's words, I'll end here. And maybe a few of you have had some vividness in your life recently that made you feel, now I'm connected. Now I'm looking at this fully. Now I understand why I'm doing this sitting practice. I can remember, Nettie.
Well, I didn't have a question or a story or anything. I just wanted to really appreciate the way you described hearing just a few words from Catherine shifting your perception of yourself in the Sangha from being a guest to being like part of the whole lineage. And I love it when I hear those stories of just a few words can turn us sometimes, and how wonderful that is. And the effect it has on me is just to try and be present all the time, as much as possible, because we never know when those moments are going to arrive, when someone's just going to say a few words and they just penetrate and something shifts within us. So I just liked you sharing that story and comparing it to sort of like that heart filling with blood, or, you know, it coming even more vividly to life. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. Many of the board activities over the years I was on the board, and it was many years, and the people that I see on the board that are with us now, they too have all been on the board for many years. But I would go in a little reluctantly with some resistance. And then it was the wholehearted connection when we were actually doing the wordsmithing, for instance, with the bylaws, a couple of years later, we had a similar one with our grievance procedure. When you see the wholehearted efforts of people really trying to find that right word together and breaking up into small groups. I can remember I'd been in the Zen Center just a year or so when I was asked to be on the board, and I did it, and after a few months I had a Dokusan with Catherine, and I said, you know, I'll finish out my term here on the board, but I don't think I'll continue. It really feels a lot different than my sitting practice. And I appreciate the intensity and the solitude and the quietude of my sitting practice. And our board work is so much different. And Catherine leaned into me and said, Patrick, being on the board is your practice. And talked about her years in Tassajara, where she, of course, had sat many periods of Zazen and listened to many lectures, but the part that the practice that she felt was alive for her was with other people when difficulties arose, and resolving difficulties and working out bylaws and working out how to do a ceremony with the people at hand, and that for her was the practice. So that's when practice life and the reality of my whole life started melding together. There wasn't the quiet Zendo and then the rest of my life. That's when I saw that practice was my, or started seeing that practice was my whole life. Mary. But please unmute.
Sometimes I think that I'm the most alive when I'm the most disturbed, either frightened or ashamed of something or worried about something. Somehow or other, after all that goes away, to me, maybe I was a little more alive during that time than I am when I'm comfortable.
Yeah. And I know exactly what you mean. And I think when we feel that aliveness, we realize that it's our whole life. If we're in the middle of difficulty and waiting for the first moment to run out the door, that's a different experience than being alive in the middle of, say, a difficult meeting or in a difficult relationship that is important to resolve. We've got to get this done, and right now the tensions are high. It's a very different connection than when is this going to be over? And if only that person, you know, weren't in this, on this board, it would go a lot better. For me, that's the difference. I can be in the middle of difficulty and feel alive and connected, and I can be in the middle of difficulty and want to run away. And that's not jujuyu zamayi. That's not myself settling onto the self. Thank you for that example.
Hi. Yeah, well, this makes me think how, what draws me to practice, because I've actually was kind of thinking about that today, and if it's just sitting, I could just sit by myself. But why do I want to do it with community? Why is that so different? And there's something, I kind of am enjoying this Zoom world because it's become rather easy now for me to join in on a group of people who are practicing. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding myself compelled to not just sit by myself, but sitting with a group. It feels different in some way.
Yeah.
It's like having the support of a whole group of people who are endeavoring to kind of make that same connection, like you were saying, like why we practice. And it's not just to still the mind, although that's part of it, but it's about having connecting with the hearts of others on a kind of spiritual level that has no words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's what Catherine was saying in that last line I read from her, where she said, no one tells us how difficult it is to drop this ego and connect intimately with the world. And that difficulty is met with the support that we feel from others doing this same practice. And of course, we're connecting and intimate with the people sitting next to us, following breath and sitting in an upright posture as well. So many of us have said there's a little bit of a mystery in why sitting with others is so important. But part of it is that sense of support and unity and no separation that we feel when we sit with other people. Thank you for bringing that up. Well, maybe we can do our final chant now, and then a few announcements after the chant. May our sitting practice remind us again and again, as we sit in front of the screen, seeing all of our Dharma family we can be reminded that we're not separate, that we're intimate, that we are supporting each other in the practice of the way. Beings are
numberless. Arrive out to awaken with them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow
to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.